Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined in studio by Abe Hamilton, Public Policy Analyst and General Counsel for AFA, Walker Wildman, Assistant to the President. And then, as we typically do on our third segment for today's issues, we have Steve Jordahl, who's a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Steve, welcome back.
Good morning and good afternoon, as it applies to each of you out there.
Yes. And now, Walker, let our listeners know about our Facebook page, because we covered a lot of stories in the first hour. We're going to try to get to a bunch that Steve has brought in. And so sometimes we go through these, cycle through them kind of quickly, and people say, where was that again?
Yeah.
We post those. Tell our listeners where.
Yeah, if our listeners want to go to the Today's Issues Facebook page, that's Today's Issues if you search it on Facebook. There you can find all the news articles that we talk about, and you can click through a lot of the stories from OneNewsNow.com, our own news service. You can read more there, share it with your family and friends. And also you can watch the show live there at Today's Issues Facebook page.
All right, Steve, we got a bunch to cover, a lot of great stories.
I got so much stuff, we're not going to get to it all. But so here's what I'm going to ask. Leave me 5 minutes at the very end so that we can – I have two really funny, good stories that will leave you laughing on a day.
Yeah,
those
are good. We'll try to do that.
I'll start with top of the page at OneNewsNow.com, and that's OneNewsNow.com, your source for every news. My voice is coming back slowly but slowly.
It is. It is welcome, because earlier in the week it was pretty gritty.
I feel sorry for the people out there. You know, we have a lot of vacations. Normally, when someone is in this poor of voice, they would let them rest their voice. I'd come in and I'd just type stories and have someone else voice them. But I've had to anchor because all our staff is on vacation, so
yeah.
Spring break. Anyway, top of the page.
We got some wild people.
Top of the page at OneNewsNow.com. I know you talked with Jonathan Sines earlier last hour about the Texas bathroom bill. Well, during a recent hearing on that measure, a female minister, a woman who claims to be a man, she's a transgender minister, she goes by the name of Seth Wynn. She is opposing the bill, as you might imagine. And she says, in the beginning, God created humankind in God's image. He created them male and female. So her conclusion, God is transgender.
Okay.
You can read all about it at top of the page at OneNewsNow.com.
So this is now, I always get confused when we're talking about transgender stories, because most of the mainstream news media will use the pronoun that the individual themselves wants to use.
Right,
so
right.
I'm always having to flip it. So this transgendered minister is really a what?
She's a woman.
She's a woman. So she was born a woman.
She's a born a woman calling herself Seth.
And so she is interpreting that in Genesis chapter 1 to mean that God is transgendered.
Because he's creating them in his own image, and he created a male and a female. Now, we don't disagree that God does not have a gender as we know gender among ourselves, male or female, and that God has given us his qualities, and he's given men more prominent qualities that we describe as manly, and he's given women more prominent qualities which we describe as womanly. But God himself doesn't have those genders, but he does ask us to refer to him in the male pronoun. It's up to him, but that's what he does. So that's where we leave that. That's top of the page there.
But that's just not true, though. I mean, you can't say God is transgender. I mean, his creation is male and female, period.
You can't
then draw a conclusion that somehow he is transgender. Transgenderism is not even a old you know, practice from what I'm aware of. I'm sure maybe it's historically been a sin that people struggle with, but even in our country, this hasn't been a topic but the last few decades. You know, back in the 1900s, people weren't saying, "Well, I'm a man, but I want to feel like a woman."
Well, I mean, I think
back
this,
in the 1900s, that's funny.
I mean, that wasn't
I
trend.
I missed that. This young guy, way back in the 1900s.
Like early 1900s.
You're talking about like it's the time of Caligula or something, one of the Roman emperors.
Even when the 1950, I believe it's in the 1970s, the some of the non-discrimination language, you know. Yeah.
Don't, well, Title IX was written back
right,
then,
on the basis of sex. That wasn't even a topic then when they were writing that legislation.
It wasn't a controversy, and I think there have always been people who struggled with this. Listen, and we don't want to spend a lot of time on this because this is, you know, not a theological debate show, but the fact that God said, I'm making mankind, humankind, for those who want to be more like that, in my image, male and female, he created them, that does not give people the right to say once someone is male, they can switch to female.
Right.
Right.
That is not even in the discussion in Genesis chapter 1.
Right.
No.
And so,
there biblical characters who do that.
That's right. I don't recall any off the top of my head. And listen, folks, I want to make clear this is in talking about pronouns and what pronoun we're supposed to use. Sometimes we do laugh at this, but this is not. For the people who are struggling, we want to make sure we indicate that Christians should have compassion on people who struggle, because we all struggle with something, and we're all broken in one way or another. And when we come to Christ, the Spirit of God is in the business of, I can use that phrase, of conforming us to the image of God's Son, okay? So we want to make clear that that's the journey that every Christian is on, and we need to have compassion on those who are struggling in this area. However, as I mentioned in the last segment, when someone is struggling with that, that is their issue. And without being crude, that is their problem. And that doesn't mean that young ladies in a locker room at school have to change how they feel about having a boy in their locker room just because that boy is struggling with what gender he is. So these are complicated issues, and Christians should preach the truth and speak the truth in love. And sometimes I fail at that. I just want to make that clear. All right, let's move on.
All right, I've got another story that talks about a little bit of the hypocrisy going on within our government.
No.
I believe it, yeah.
So
President Trump has unveiled a blueprint for his budget. It includes some deep cuts, as he's promised to do, to some of the programs and the agencies out there. He's going to be funding the military, increasing funding there, but everywhere else he's going to kind of start trimming some stuff. And the Washington Post published a headline that said, or he says, he will shake the federal government to its core. The Minneapolis Star Tribune says he's going to rob the State Department of its best leverage and create greater instability in the world. CNN headline says that he is planning to dismember the government $1 at a time. And so all these headlines, they're just aghast at what's going to be going on. I want to read you a paragraph here. This is a quote. This is the largest, swiftest government-wide cut in the history of the United States. It's not just a post-Cold War defense reduction. Every department except justice has become smaller. So-and-so and I are just as proud of making this government work better as we are of making it smaller. It isn't good enough yet or small enough yet, but we sure have things headed in the right direction. Who said that last quote?
I'm going to say President Obama.
Bill Clinton.
Huh.
In 1996. The era of big
government
is over.
I was wondering why you said so-and-so. I was like, is there anything
on
there?
He wanted to.
This was actually Al Gore talking about President Clinton.
It's okay when they do it, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, in 1996, I think it was, he had the speech, the era of big government is over.
When was that speech?
Right between, you know, he'd served two terms.
Yes, this was before re-election?
And it was right after he won the second term, but Republicans won the House and the Senate, and he realized he had to move more to center.
Triangulation is what he called it.
So the hypocrisy goes on. Nothing new under the sun, as they say.
So what we're saying, the reason I said President Obama is because during the sequester debates, and that is when they slashed spending, across the board, didn't they?
Yes.
They cut spending across the board.
Was it 10%?
Right.
I think it was.
It was 10%, I think.
I think it was 10% across the board.
It was 10% if they could not come to
an
agreement.
And they could not,
and so the sequester took effect.
Yeah.
So that was good fiscal policy, I think. But here's where it I just heard a French horn.
Yes, that was my iPad.
Lunchtime for
reminding me. No, reminding me. I have a meeting at 11:30.
Tally-ho!
I can't go. Yes, I'm sorry. I should have put that on.
The bays are barking.
Should have put that on mute.
Sorry, but what the reality was that the press and the media was able to hang that sequester around the necks of the Republicans, even though it was equally or more the Democrats' fault. And on top of that, President Obama got to decide what got closed and what didn't, which is why you had the World War II Memorial barricaded as a very public show, and White House tours canceled as a very public show. Look what the Republicans are doing, which has made the Republicans gun-shy about shutdowns ever since. Because even if it is the Democrats' fault, it's going to turn out looking bad for Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say this. Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, is not gun shy about anything.
No,
so he said he was gonna wanted to shrink the government, and on the Democratic side of this issue, they have resisted what they call cuts when Republicans were only asking that we shrink the expansion. We're instead of expanding the federal government 4%, we want to expand it only 2%.
Right.
And the Democrats out in public said Republicans are slashing the federal government
by
2%, slashing the budget. Mm-hmm. And all they were doing was shrinking the expansion of it by a certain percentage and not even cutting into the
Reality here, as Abe, I'm sure you know, is that most of the budget is taken up with stuff that is off the chopping block to begin with. These are things like Medicaid and Medicare that have already been spoken for, and they can't cut them back.
They're probably part of mandatory.
Mandatory
spending.
Not discretionary.
Yeah. Right.
Well, discretionary spending doesn't really, frankly, amount to that large a chunk anymore.
Right.
Most of
less
it is,
and less.
Yes. So
servicing the debt, and then there's. So okay. So I've got some things to tell parents about here. Is that okay?
Yeah. Absolutely. No. We want to
avoid
keep our parents in the dark
because we have a large children listening audience here. So we need to focus more on what the children need.
That's right.
And so
they watch Looney Tunes until 10 o'clock Central, and then they listen to this show.
Hey. All right. So I'm going to admit to a guilty pleasure, a guilty habit that I have. I, from the beginning, have been taken with this show called The Big Bang Theory. It's on CBS.
So you're a closeted nerd?
I am.
Well, isn't that a big show for nerds? I've seen a few episodes of it.
I don't know.
It didn't float my boat. But
typical of all Hollywood fare, you have men and women living together without being married, and the topic of sex is rampant, and the jokes are often. But in between all those offensive things, there's some very funny, good writing. And I'm old enough and mature enough, I don't have kids in the home, I can wade through that, and I might be hearing from our brother Tim later to say that I might want to change my viewing habits. But coming down the road, let me just tell you, that CBS is planning a couple of spinoffs.
One, from Big Bang Theory?
Yes. Actually, one is a show produced by Johnny Galecki, who is one of the characters on The Big Bang Theory. He plays...
Sounds like a guy from the neighborhood.
Hey,
Johnny Galecki!
He plays Sheldon's roommate. I'm not thinking of his name right now, but... he is producing a show that is going to be titled Living Biblically. CBS, was that me?
It is.
Oh.
Yes.
That's
sorry
payback
about that.
For
you
making fun of
paid
Ed.
Back.
That's right.
Folks, your proud listeners are going, I don't know what's going on. My iPad went off, and now Steve's phone is
that
going
is,
off.
That is getting a call from George Barna.
Okay. So, all right, back
so,
to
anyway, so anyway,
back to your sinful television habits.
Yes. The show CBS has greenlit or picked up this show. I don't know how long it'll go, but they picked up the pilot, which is called Living Biblically. It's a half an hour a show centered on a young man who comes to a crossroads in his life and decides to live according to the Bible, which we would think would be good, but no.
Uh-oh.
He's not going to eat shellfish. He's not going to dress in poly cotton blends. And it's basically making fun of all of the Old Testament stuff. So, and it's a comedy. So
Well, that's Living Biblically was a book, if I'm not mistaken.
By A.G. Jacobs.
Yeah, who was written, and it is done, in my opinion, it's done to mock the Old Testament, but mock the Old Testament restrictions, dietary restrictions, so on and so forth, as a way to poke fun of Christians who talk about homosexuality being a sin.
Right.
Because they'll say, well, then you can't eat shellfish because
it's a way to delegitimize the scriptural passages against homosexuality. They say, well, yeah, the Old Testament says that it's wrong to be homosexual, but they also say it's wrong to eat shellfish.
It's very easy to answer that.
There are theological answers to that.
If you don't want to do it, Abe, I'll do it. But let's go ahead. You've been quiet for a while. Tell people about the differences between the moral law and the civil and religious restrictions under the Old Testament.
Sure, that's a softball.
Yes.
For Abe, it is. Maybe not for somebody like
well,
me.
Well, basically, when in the New Testament, when Jesus says he came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law, Jesus is indicating that the moral law is still in play. The portions of the law that are no longer applicable are the ceremonial and, you know, the ritualistic practices of the Old Testament. So it's an old, continued attempt to try to invalidate biblical Christianity when people immediately turn to idiotic things like shellfish and other things to try to invalidate our stand to biblical morality in terms of human sexuality. So it's an apples and oranges ridiculous attack on the authority of Scripture, and it's one that's easily addressed if we understand,
and that's the issue. And we want to move on, but I didn't want anyone to think we're avoiding this issue. Yeah. It is easily addressed if someone really wants to know the answer.
They usually
just want to poke fun and mock and scoff at the Bible. What's always interesting is the people who make this argument in order to poke fun at what Christians believe the Bible says about homosexuality. I am waiting for someone to make that argument and then make it about adultery.
Exactly.
And
you'll
say, well, my wife can go out and commit adultery because, hey, listen, we still eat shellfish.
Exactly.
So I get tired at the sophomoric attempts to ridicule what the Scripture says. I'm starting to get upset. So let's move on.
Well, let me say this in that regard too, and it's just to give some encouragement to Christians who may be waffly on the issue. On the other side of it, what other sins do you hear people or pastors address from the pulpit when they begin to say, "Well, listen, guys, you know, I don't really have an issue with this, but you know, the Bible says it, so you know, and I have friends like this, but I just, you know, I got to talk about adultery."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have friends who are adulterers, so I don't want you to think that I'm just this adulterphobic bigot.
Yeah.
But you know, come on, the Bible is clear. It's His word. It's not ours. We stand on it. Period.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. What else you got?
All right. So
because you said to hold you 5 minutes at the end. You've got a minute and 45 seconds. Before we do the two funny stories.
Okay.
What other show you got that you said?
The other show is another spinoff on the Big Bang Theory. It's called Young Sheldon. Sheldon is the character, the lead character, who is this genius and very socially awkward. And his mother, he was brought up in Texas his mother has a deep Christian faith, which comes across in the comedic realm as wacky.
Right.
And so this is his growing up, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this show is called Young Sheldon is going to be one joke about what Christians believe after another while this young genius.
And what's the name of the actor who plays that part?
And
he is a funny character. I'll grant you that.
His name is
here's
Jim Parsons.
Here's the point I was going to make. He has come out of the closet as a gay man, the actor I'm talking about. So I wonder if young Sheldon is going to make fun on that issue in particular.
Well, old Sheldon is not homosexual.
No, I'm talking about the part of the purpose is to make fun of the Texas.
I think they just, frankly, I don't even know if they understand as much as they're going to be doing because they've got a very, very hot show in the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
And they're spinning off things left and right to try to cash in, which, you know, of course they would. All right, let me get to these stories. I've been holding this one for a long time. I've got two of these. And the second one just makes me laugh all over the place. But let me give you the first one first. So Cleveland was experiencing a little bit of a carjacking problem. And specifically, police had started coming down on these teenagers, an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, they suspected. They were trying to find them. Well, one day, they hijacked two cars within an hour. And they hijacked the first one.
So they got a lot of initiative,
right,
these two young guys.
They threw the, they threw the driver
hard working.
Out, and they got in the car, and they drove off. Well, the second car they came to, the 17-year-old pulled the driver out of the car and threw him in the back seat and got into the driver's seat, and the 18-year-old carjacker got into the passenger seat. Then he looked down and realized the car was a stick shift, and he didn't know how to drive a stick shift. So he turned around with his gun, pointed his gun at the owner of the car in the back seat and said, "You got to tell me how to drive a stick shift." So the guy tried and tried to describe how to drive it. He couldn't do it. They got frustrated. And so they grabbed the guy's cell phone and they ran off without the car. Well, the police tracked them down using the cell phone.
Listen,
the 17 and 18-year-old are under arrest.
This is one of those stories where you go, wow, it's not really funny while it's happening to this guy. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking this guy is going, I got a gun pointed at me, and you want me to explain at gunpoint how to drive a stick shift? And if you've ever tried to drive a stick shift, it must have looked hilarious as that car was jerking around as they tried to get that thing going.
Yeah.
You know where I would love to be a fly on the wall is in the jail cell.
Back in the 1900s.
Or in the lunchroom. In the lunchroom at jail, and where his buddy, maybe that he knows from high school or something, who's in jail says, "Hey, man, so how'd you end up in here?" Well,
it's not actually a long story. It's a pretty short story.
Yeah.
I love that they took his phone, and that's how they were going to get something, and that's how the police tracked him down.
All right, so these weren't they weren't two of the brightest. They had good initiative. They're hardworking carjackers, but they weren't the brightest. So,
all right,
what else you got?
All right, the Natural Environmental Research Council in Britain got itself into a little bit of a corner. They decided they had a new ship and they wanted the public to name it. So they had a contest to name the ship. What are you going to name the ship? So they put it online and somebody, and this would be something that my son would do, put up that they wanted the ship to be called Bodie McBoatface. Bodie McBoatface. And
the name that they chose?
This was the public? The public, it just started, went viral, and it started catching on. And sure enough, it got the most votes. So the British agency was going to have to name its boat HMS Bodie McBoatface. But they didn't. They named it after Sir Richard Attenborough.
They intervened.
Oh, yes. And a nod to the people who did the contest, there's a mini sub that they launch off of this boat, and it is called the Bodie McBoatface mini sub. Wow. And I love this tweet by this guy. "Best of luck to Bodie McBoatface today. You're not a boat, nor do you have a face, but don't let that hold you back."
Well, that is, and then I'm seeing a picture of the
Bodie McBoatface submarine.
McBoatface.
That's it.
Wow.
Listen, so folks, there are some humorous things happening out
right
in the world, and we're going to work on Steve and his viewing habits. So don't email us.
Everybody stretch your hands this direction.
Don't email us. Folks, that is all the time we have on behalf of the whole crew we have here, as well as Bodie McBoatface on his behalf. We want to thank you for listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. More great programming straight ahead, and we hope you'll join us again tomorrow for another edition of today's issues. Bye for now.